Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, America. It is Eric Erickson here at the Eric Erickson Show. The phone number, you want to be a part of the program, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. Whoa, we got impeachment on the brain this morning. The senators, I don't know that they've woken up yet. They were falling asleep last night. And I regret that this did not come out until the very end of my show yesterday, because it really puts in perspective the way things are shaping up over in the Senate. National Republican Senatorial Committee put out this video yesterday right before the Senate trial. I would watch this movie. I mean, this video is like a trailer until you realize that the best parts are in the trailer, and we don't actually want to sit through that. I took a bullet for the team, and I watched the impeachment trial. I am in such a foul mood today. I actually got into a text message war with my producer because he made me mad this morning because he didn't realize what a foul mood I was already in, and I had to apologize. Here is the video from the – well, you can't see it. You're just going to have to listen. But it's perfect. It really sums up that this has been in the works since the day Donald Trump was elected.
They never wanted him to be president. They never even thought it was possible.
This isn't a real presidential run.
Trump will not be president.
He will never be president.
But then, America spoke.
A complete earthquake.
Donald Trump wins the presidency.
And when President Trump was sworn in as the 45th president of the United States, the left lost it. This impeachment sham started the day he was elected.
The first headline in the Washington Post before the president was inaugurated was they were going to impeach him.
I will fight until he is impeached.
We're going to go in there, we're going to impeach the motherfucker.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
This is about preventing a potentially disastrous outcome from occurring next year.
They're impeaching me, you know why? Because they want to win an election. And that's the only way they can do it.
So let's be clear. This is not some neutral judgment that Democrats came to reluctantly. It's not some somber moment or serious exercise for the left. It is the predetermined end of a partisan crusade.
Nancy Pelosi has said she's not going to send the articles of impeachment over.
Wait a minute. This is not very serious if you're not sending over the articles.
Which ones for handing out souvenir impeachment pens?
The Congress is wasting a lot of their time and our time.
I've been a Democrat for 49 years. I'm very disappointed in the Democratic Party right now.
They are trying to prevent President Trump from winning a second term.
An angry mob is at the gate. But the United States Senate has the watch. The Senate exists for moments like this. So it's time for the adults in the room to have their seat at the table. Nancy Pelosi and House Democrats have had their turn. The sham is over. A fair trial starts now.
The impeachment trial begins. Well, yeah, the fair trial begins, and it began, well, it late in the day. Chief Justice John Roberts had to lecture the sides. The nutshell thing here is that Adam Schiff, believe it or not, did a better job than Republican Twitter would have you believe. He made the case based on existing facts and witnesses that the president should be convicted. The president's team was bogged down in procedural arguments. They thought that the Democrats were going to make the procedural arguments, and the Democrats actually were able to get a surprise off on them, because here they come with Adam Schiff making a legitimate case for impeachment based on existing facts. And, you know, I used to be in the world, and I finally just got fed up with the intellectual dishonesty of it. Adam Schiff's a clown. He is a clown. Adam Schiff is an absolute clown, and he's not the great guy to litigate this long term. But his opening statement was solid, despite what you're hearing. And some of the president's team were a little more clownish than they should have been, bogged down on procedural matters and process arguments, when the other side's cleaning their clock on, yeah, look at all the evidence and witnesses we have so far, and we're pretty sure if the rest come in, it'll be even more damning. But then Chuck Schumer rained on the parade by dragging it out until almost 2 o'clock this morning with procedural votes that even Dianne Feinstein was taking breaks and going out and saying, we need to stop this because we're going to lose. We'd like to go home tonight. We'd actually like to have this trial. It was ridiculous. And it ended up with the Democrats on the floor manager side getting snippy with the president's team, which caused John Roberts, Chief Justice of the United States and designated hostage. Dude is not the designated survivor. He is the designated hostage, and he looked like it half the day, like, oh my. You know, who was the admiral who ran with Ross Perot? Who am I? Why am I here? That looked like John Roberts was sitting there the whole time, like, God, what have I done to deserve this punishment? Forgive me. But he ended the night this way.
I think it is appropriate at this point for me to admonish both the House managers and the President's counsel in equal terms to remember that they are addressing the world's greatest deliberative body. One reason it has earned that title is because its members avoid speaking in a manner and using language that is not conducive to civil discourse. In the 1905 Swain trial, a senator objected when one of the managers used the word pettifogging, and the presiding officer said the word ought not to have been used. I don't think we need to aspire to that highest standard, but I do think those addressing the Senate should remember where they are.
Now, what started this was Jerry Nadler was starting to lose it through the day. He got really upset that the Senate Republicans wanted to essentially build off the Clinton impeachment precedent. He's like, I don't know why we got to deal with the Clinton impeachment precedent, because you... I realize, Jerry Nadler, that you're in the House of Representatives, and in Congress, the Democrats are the opposition, but the Senate is the enemy, or the Republicans are the opposition, and the Senate is the enemy. The Senate actually is a group of adults, and they're run on precedent. And when the Senate does things, unlike the House of Representatives, when the Senate does stuff, they build off existing precedent. Why? Because the Senate is perceived to be or is run as a body that is in continuous operation. That is why you rarely see major rules changes in the Senate, and it requires typically a two-thirds vote or a nuclear deployment of an option to get around that two-thirds requirement, because the Senate is perceived to be continuing. Why? Because only a third of the Senate is up for re-election every 2 years. It provides a level of stability and maturity to the body that they take great pride in. All of the senators on the Republican and the Democratic side take great pride in it. It is notable that you get Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, and Bernie Sanders out of the campaign trail and say, yeah, we're going to get rid of the impeachment. We're going to get rid of the filibuster. The Senate's a useless institution. And then they get in the Senate and they're like, I do declare I'm going to filibuster under Rule 3 of the United States, because they're senators and they love this. They love the fact that there are two from every state. They may get on the campaign trail and demagogue their institution because they're politicians, many blood-sucking creatures. But when they get back to Washington, D.C. inside the Senate, they're senators. If those jokers could show up in white toga robes, they would do it. We would just all laugh at them, so they don't. Now, again, Chief Justice Roberts was laughing about all of this, or I shouldn't say laughing about it. He was admonishing both sides because Jerry Nadler started a fight. The House guys responded. It got a little ugly. Well, here comes – what the hell is happening to CNN? I worked for CNN for 3 years. I've got a lot of friends at CNN, and privately, even a lot of the reporters are grousing about the direction Jeff Zucker is taking it. And the reason that they're grousing about it is because CNN had always prided itself in being the very objective news network. I will tell you, I got hired at CNN when Lou Dobbs' show was coming to an end, and people in the building were celebrating that Lou Dobbs' show was coming to an end. Not because they were left of center, but because the people at CNN are like, we could finally be a true objective news network. We can finally be what we wanted to be while Lou isn't here with his clown show partisan stuff. We can finally do it. We don't have Crossfire. We don't have Lou Dobbs. We're a straight news organization. And now they keep hiring all these left-wing flacks. John Harwood from CNBC, who's a left-wing partisan talking point machine, has now been hired. It's ridiculous. We've now got Joe Lockhart, President Clinton's former press secretary, trying to explain what the Chief Justice was doing, that really it was about the Republicans. Even anyone who watched it, it was clear it was Jerry Nadler set off the Chief Justice. And even the people on CNN aren't having Joe Lockhart's nonsense.
Joe, what struck you from yesterday?
Well, I thought that the Chief Justice's comments were aspirational because they are not living up to this. You have two sides talking past each other. The Democrats are focused on the evidence, what happened, the gravity of the situations. The Republicans are sitting trying to provide sound bites for Sean Hannity, Laura Ingraham, and Tucker Carlson. That's all they're trying to do. It's what they did in the House. And I think while the Chief Justice said in equal parts, he was not really speaking to the House managers. Mm-hmm. He was speaking to the president's legal team.
Do you think that he was talking to Jerry Nadler about using the term cover up and what that was?
Well, then he's going to admonish him many more times because the Democrats are going to use that.
Joe, what's...
Yes. You don't think he was going after Jerry Nadler? Of course he was going after Jerry Nadler. Okay, and by the way, I want to set the stage here. This is CNN. You've got John Avalon here. You've got John Berman and Allison Camerota. I know them both, by the way, good people. I know John Avalon as well. He and I disagree on a lot of stuff, but he's not a bad guy. And he's definitely, though, center-left in his worldview. And you've got Joe Lockhart. So you've got two anchors, neither of whom are really friendly to the GOP side. They're nice people, but neither of whom are really friendly to the GOP side. You've got John Avalon there as kind of the playing adult in the room to Joe Lockhart. Where's the balance in this conversation? How do you bring out Joe Lockhart, President Clinton's former press secretary, and allow him to do this? You know, thankfully, you got the anchors pushing back. You know, on occasion, I'll tell you. When I was at CNN, one of the things that I like to do the most, largely because I just hate everybody in politics, is they would bring me out, typically be with Anderson Cooper or with John King or with Blitzer, and we would have a 5 to 7 minute conversation about the problems within the Republican Party itself. And there was no need to have a Democrat in this conversation because you're focused solely on the Republican side. In the same way, if you were having a conversation about the Democratic side, there's no need to have a Republican in there talking about what's the internal politics in the Democratic side because they're not in that fight. And we would have a great conversation and there would be pushback and there would be intellectual honesty expected on both sides. And they were good conversations. But if I was ever in a conversation and it was about R versus D, there was always a Democrat. And oftentimes it would be me versus the anchor and two other people. And I was fine with that. A missionary trying to lure people to my side. I was totally down with that. I enjoyed it. But I look at this. You've got Allison Camerota and John Berman. They are fine and decent people. I like them both. They are not friendly to the Trump administration. They've been openly hostile to a lot of it. You've got John Avalon, who's in that boat as well. And then you've got Joe Lockhart. Where's the balance on this panel? At least they were good enough to push back. And that's why I respect all of them. Even when we disagree on politics, they're willing to push back when they've just got one Democrat on the panel. Or if they had just one Republican on the panel, they'd be pushing back, probably even more so pushing back. But I'm struck by the way CNN is deciding they want to be the smart man's MSNBC, which has no market share whatsoever. And that's what we are to expect when we have coverage of impeachment on TV networks these days. If I could get a network, in all honesty, seriously, if I could get a network that had Bill Hemmer, Martha McCallum, Brett Baer, Jake Tapper, Whoop Blitzer, John King, I would be in heaven. It would be, they would call it the Straight News Network, SNN, the Straight News Network. Because you would get a balance of known personalities, you would get some level of respect, and you would actually get a pretty decent job of people committed to actually straight news. Now, and you can quibble with the details. I know there will be, Wolf Blitzer, he's a liberal hack. He's really not. And I get that. But, man, the way we're going with CNN, for example, CNN has hired Valerie Jarrett's daughter as an anchor. Do you really think you're going to get a fair and honest depiction of what's happening with the Republicans from Valerie Jarrett's daughter or Jim Scudo or whatever his name is? Who was in the Obama administration is now an anchor at CNN. Do you really think? In fact, there are plenty of examples then. And so we're getting all of this layered on top of commentary about impeachment. I'm going to take a timeout. I am happy to take your phone calls on this. 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. When we come back, I will be able to do it in the 5 minutes I will have on the other side of this break or whatever it is. I am going to lay out for you precisely what happened on the first real day of the Senate impeachment trial from the vantage point of hate them all, don't believe any of them, and you will probably come away with a realistic view of what's going on.
I really do like his opinion on things.
Eric Erickson, the information you need and the truth you demand.
He tells it like it is.
Live every weekday.
Just a reminder, if you text the word impeachment to 52886, you'll be connected to the Eric Erickson Show and the Resurgent Action Center, where you'll be able to email, tweet, and call your senators telling them to just go on and stop this farcical impeachment trial. Let the voters decide in November. We're close to the election. These people are clowns. Let the voters decide this matter. Text the word impeachment to 52886. Now, your summation of the first full day of the impeachment trial from someone who hates them all. Chuck Schumer completely wasted the Senate's time with a series of motions. I think he made a terrible tactical strategic decision. He wanted to do witnesses and motions. Mitch McConnell already said that they weren't going to do this until after opening statements, but Schumer decided to make the fight anyway. He kept them there until almost 2 o'clock in the morning, to the point that even Democratic senators like Dianne Feinstein were saying, this is ridiculous. We keep losing these things. Let's just go home, get it over with for the night. But no, Schumer did it. It was a strategic mistake in that, like the game of whack-a-mole, the little head pops up and you pound it with a little mallet, and if the head keeps popping up out of the same hole over and over and over and over, you keep whacking that hole, and then the mole pops up from a different hole while you're whacking the other hole. In the same way, Schumer just throwing these motions out, and everybody, no. Suddenly, Schumer throws one out with a legitimate point. No, because people are used to doing it. It was a terrible strategic and tactical move. It made people mad, and they just got in the habit of voting no. They didn't even want to consider it by the end of the night, and they sailed through the John Bolton one with the rest of them. Now, it'll come back after the opening statements. The other thing that happened was I saw my friends saying, oh, my gosh, Adam Schiff, he's what an idiot. What a clown show. He's doing such a terrible job. I turned on to see just how horrible it was. And I thought, wait a second. Schiff is actually making the case that based on the existing evidence and witnesses thus far, the president should be convicted. And that if they bring in more witnesses, what they will see really will just. Sorry, Senator just texted me. If they bring in more witnesses, all it will do is further the depth of knowledge to prove that the president should be convicted. But even without those additional witnesses, based on the witnesses they have and the documents they have, it's clear the president should be convicted. That was Schiff's argument. And whether you agree with the argument or not, it was a sound, mature, and responsible argument. It was not the clown show that everyone is screaming about. And that's why I hate so much of the partisan BS commentary on this stuff, is you can't just objectively say, you know what? I disagree with him, but he did a good job. He did a good job. I disagree with him. It's a clown show, and we should let the voters decide. On the Republican side, you had Pat Cipollone, the president's counsel, made some very good arguments. The problem was that a lot of the people around him, they were so busy making these process arguments about witnesses and stuff, they weren't prepared when the Democrats clearly changed their strategic trajectory with Schiff to make the case that the president should be impeached and convicted based on what they have already. They weren't prepared for that shift. And so all they could do was they passive aggressive with these. Good Lord. It's like I better not say that, but it was like a passive aggressive group of teenage girls in cliques on the floor of the Senate. And as for the senators themselves, they were trying not to fall asleep. I mean, that's your first day. John Roberts looked like he was in a hostage situation until he finally decided to lecture Jerry Nadler and the rest of them. These guys would come out, they would take breaks, they would yell about the other side, and no one's paying attention and no one cares. And here's the thing. Adam Schiff could stand on the floor of the Senate and make such a persuasive case that all of us would nod along with him, and it doesn't matter. They don't have the votes. The House of Representatives could not get even half of the retiring Republicans, couldn't get 11 of them to go along with their impeachment. If you couldn't get half of those Republicans to go along with impeachment, and these guys hate the president's guts, they're not going to get the Senate of the United States to go along with it. You're not going to get to a two-thirds vote. What they're hoping for is to get four. And another thing, I gotta give a shout out to the con artists on MSNBC. the number of people on MSNBC suffering priapism yesterday on the idea that you were going to get four Republicans to have a revolt against Mitch McConnell was astonishing. It was absolutely astonishing. They're going to get four. It's amazing. You had people with tingly in their pants, and they didn't even understand what was going on, who were convinced they were going to get four Republicans to side with Chuck Schumer against Mitch McConnell on procedural votes that will change nothing. They had half of progressive Twitter and social media yesterday was convinced there was going to be a rebellion against Mitch McConnell. They were watching the trial for this rebellion to happen, and it never happened. What a bunch of liars on TV. People who have no idea what's going on, trying to appear educated about a process. What a bunch of horse manure. You come away dumber from watching these pundits on TV talk about stuff they don't even understand. It's nuts. You know, I'm very mindful that while we are a show expanding in Georgia, we've got impeachment happening this week. We also have the Georgia legislature meeting. And I'm trying to balance out the show, flipping back and forth between national content and local content. I really do want to talk about the legislature and what's going on. And I figure one of the great people who runs a great group who's worth getting on here to talk about what's happening in Georgia right now is Joshua Edmonds from the Georgia Life Alliance. Welcome to the program. How are you?
Hey, Eric, I'm doing great. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you for taking time out of your busy day to do this with everything else going on. As I mentioned to you in email, I kind of wanted to get you guys lay the land. First, if you would, let everybody know about what GLA does.
Sure. So, I mean, first of all, whatever all of your listeners should know is that GLA, who is the state affiliate, the National Right to Life, one of our founding members was yours truly, Eric Erickson. You had a vision for building a pro-life culture in Georgia. You care about this state with your scope being so wide across the political sphere of the country. Your heart is here in Georgia, and you saw fit to help build this organization. So thank you for that. Everything we've done is built on that foundation. And a lot of what we've done has only been possible by the foundation you and our other founders helped lay back in 2014, 2015. But so what we do is, as Georgia Life Alliance is we sort of approach this pro-life issue holistically. We view that the sanctity of life is not based around one piece of policy or one issue, but it's a spectrum of finding ways to respect and protect human dignity, whether it's for the baby in the womb through things like the heartbeat bill that was passed and signed last year, or up to defending those who are at the end of their life. All the way to natural death, we've got a piece of policy right now in the legislature put up by the Senate Minority Leader Steve Henson that would legalize assisted suicide in Georgia, and we're staunchly opposing that, and we'll be working hard to crush that in the coming days so that never sees the light of day. And then we lead education efforts around the state, so helping to take not just policy items, but educational elements to churches and youth groups and to GOP groups around our state so that our communities understand what it means to be pro-life and how they can do their part to build that pro-life culture in Georgia.
Now, you mentioned the assisted suicide legislation. I was actually surprised when I saw that come down the pike. I assumed eventually Georgia would get there with the Democrats. I just expected this would be their hill to die on this year with the minority leader in the Senate pushing this. What other big ticket items do you see in the legislature right now? Obviously, adoption reform, I assume, is one y'all are paying attention to. But what surprises are out there for us?
I think that what the final picture of what adoption and foster reform ends up looking like here this year will be something for everyone to watch. I know the governor has rolled out a plan. We've got a piece of legislation that we're working on right now that we're going to roll out in the coming days. I believe the lieutenant governor's office has been working on some policy as well. And there's going to be a task force that's going to help direct Georgia's trajectory for the issue of foster and adoption reform over the next 3 years. And so it'll be great to see when that train reaches its final destination, if it does, on what foster and adoption reform looks like for Georgia. We were surprised to see the assisted suicide bill come up. It comes up every couple of years. The last time we saw efforts to legalize euthanasia and assisted suicide was back in 2016, and we stopped that back then. And I guess Steve Henson's last hoorah in the state Senate wants to be you know, trying to end the lives of the innocent and the vulnerable at the end of their lives. But that's not going to pass this year. There's also going to be some really interesting collaboration, I think, over this idea of reasonable accommodations for pregnant workers that we've been taking a look at throughout the off session and seeing what we can do to, you know, now that we've made the statement on the heartbeat bill that lives are precious and valuable in the womb, and we value moms and babies equally. Now, once mom is pregnant and, you know, abortion's off the table after 6 weeks, how do we accommodate and respect her dignity as a pregnant person in Georgia? And there have been a lot of conversations about ways to sort of broaden that pro-life tent to include those reasonable accommodations and ways we can respect life in less conventional pro-life ways to really reinforce that pro-life culture. So it's going to be a very interesting session, I think.
Yeah, I suspect so. I do have this sense from talking to members of the legislature and people close to both the governor and lieutenant governor that we're headed into an election year. So outside of the budget, they would prefer to minimize any sort of major controversial things until next year, whether it's the film tax credit or some of the other big fights on school choice and religious liberty and things. What sense are you getting?
I think you're spot on. I think that, you know, every other year we start looking towards November and thinking, you know, what helps us most, what hurts us least coming into the elections, especially when we've got, you know, what appears to be a very volatile metro Atlanta area for Republicans. I think that we're going to see a lot of folks during this session wanting to stay away from those controversial issues. I think that's going to help us champion fostered adoption reform a lot more. That's going to be a very bipartisan effort. I think reasonable accommodations for pregnant workers will be something that will be a bipartisan champion issue. We've got another bill called Simon's Law that we're working on that protects parental rights and protects minor patients who've got critical injuries and critical illnesses from having do not resuscitate orders placed on their file without parental consent. That'll become a bipartisan champion issue. And so these every other year, you know, a lot of folks feel the exhaustion of, oh, we're, you know, all we're going to do is the happy-go-lucky, pat yourselves on the back and go towards November, you know, try not to make anyone angry. But it really does help some of these common sense pro-life efforts that GLA puts forward and build a lot of consensus around and help push that across the finish line. But, yeah, I wouldn't expect to see – you know, there won't be another heartbeat bill-esque effort right this year, I don't imagine.
Yeah, no major religious liberty fights either, or even the faith-based protections in adoption and foster care, I suspect. First, thanks very much. And those of you just tuning in, this is Josh Edmonds. I'm talking with Georgia Life Alliance. Now, if somebody wanted to get involved with GLA, what would they do?
So there's a couple of ways that a lot of folks love to get involved. And one of those is, you know, especially during the legislative session, getting involved in our political advocacy. We're down at the Capitol every day during session. We're meeting with members, building consensus, building coalitions, working on policy. So you can join us down at the Capitol. And you can do that by going to our website, GeorgiaLifeAlliance.com, or to our Facebook page, Facebook.com/GeorgiaLife, and message us and coordinate a time to come down. You can also volunteer at one of our events as well by going to our website or social media and reaching out via email or message. We have our big pro-life lobby day coming up on February the 10th down at the state capitol. Rules Chairman Jeff Mullis is sponsoring us down at room 450 in the capitol from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. on February the 10th. So we're going to go down, train average citizens on how to be engaged in the political process and then shepherd them through what it looks like to be a citizen lobbyist. A lot of people love getting involved that way. You can also bring us into your churches. That's a big focus for us, is helping to bring the gospel of the sanctity of life to our pulpits and helping train and equip our churches to have being pro-life written into their DNA. So that's a huge volunteer effort, is helping to coordinate with churches or coming to your church and making pro-life a part of your church's priority list. And again, that'd be going to GeorgiaLifeAlliance.com or Facebook.com/GeorgiaLife. And reaching out to us and helping us coordinate that with you.
Hey, last question for you. The March for Life is coming up. We had the huge rally in Virginia last week, and of course the media stopped covering it when nothing happened. They give all sorts of coverage to the Women's March. I was really, really proud. My 14-year-old daughter asked if she could participate in the March for Life here in Macon, where I am, this coming Friday. And what involvement are you guys going to have, if any, with March for Life activities coming up?
So what I've noticed over the past, 8 to 10 months going around the state after the Heartbeat Bill, meeting with a lot of communities and speaking to, GOP groups and churches, is that there's a lot of local marches for life that are happening. Macon's got theirs. There's going to be one in the Augusta area. There's one in Columbus area. I heard one down in way South Georgia and the Valdosta area that's happening for the first time this year. So we're trying to help support those local groups who are starting up marches for life, maybe for the first time, because it's hard for them to make a drive to Atlanta or hard for them to get up to D.C. We think that our communities are strongest when they're active, and you can do that best right at home. So we're helping to support a lot of local marches for life. We've also been helping to coordinate people getting up to D.C. With Students for Life and folks like that. And then we're also there'll probably be some sort of activity from the current presidential administration on Friday talking about pro-life efforts moving forward that I think will be tied to the March for Life. And we'll be a part of that if it happens on Friday. So we're helping to encourage people to just get involved in your local community. If there's not a March for Life, start one. It doesn't have to be a big affair. Just get your church together, rally around your pregnancy resource center in the community and stand up and make your voice heard.
Fantastic. Josh, thanks so much. Glad to put a spotlight on Georgia Life Alliance and the policy initiatives you guys are helping push. Thank you.
Now, thank you, Eric. Appreciate all that you do.
Absolutely. Josh Edmonds, Georgia Life Alliance. You can go to GeorgiaLifeAlliance.org or .com or Facebook.com/GeorgiaLife. Great group. Yeah, I did. I wasn't going to mention it, but, there's a group in Georgia. It's a pro-life group that takes such a hard line on everything that it can't get anything done. It can't move the ball down the field because it expects to run the whole distance. And if it can't run the whole distance, it won't run at all. And groups like that very much frustrate me. For example, the other pro-life group in the state opposed the fetal heartbeat legislation. And what was so galling actually is that the other group fundraised off of the fetal heartbeat legislation. They actually did. And Josh is too good a guy to raise this issue, but man, it made me mad that you have a pro-life group in the state of Georgia that opposed the pro-life legislation. Do you know why they oppose the pro-life legislation? Because the rape exception in the law, the governor and the legislative body, the legislators could not get it passed unless they included an exception for rape in the fetal heartbeat legislation. There was no way to get it passed. And so the question was, do you get it passed or do you not? Do you pass a fetal heartbeat legislation that has an exception for rape, or do you just not get a fetal heartbeat legislation passed at all? And they decided it was better to do it than to not do it. And this other pro-life group opposed it. And then when it was passed, had the audacity to fundraise off of it being passed. And it was that. This is the same group that years ago Congress drafted a pro-life measure to prohibit abortion after 20 weeks. It was the fetal pain bill. And there was an exception to get Republican women votes in the House of Representatives. There was an exception for rape. Rape, incest, and life of the mother were included in there. And they wanted either no exceptions or just life of the mother. But they did not want the rape exception or the incest or anything like that. And so they opposed the legislation. They actually opposed legislation that would prohibit abortions after 20 weeks because it contained some exceptions. And that was too much for me. They were attacking good Republican members of Congress who were advancing pro-life measure because it wasn't 100%. It was 80%, not 100%, so it wasn't good enough. They also have opposed a 20-week bill in the past because it would not have prohibited abortions in the first 20 weeks. And that I'm not making up. This is a pro-life group that opposed a measure to ban abortions at 20 weeks because it would have allowed them for the first 20 weeks. And so they opposed. And I just said, you know what? We gotta have a new pro-life group in the state, one that actually is willing to advance the pro-life agenda and not just drag down good Republicans who are willing to support a culture of life and do it in an incremental way and show people, you know, we've done 20 weeks. Now let's do 19. Now let's do 18. Now let's do 17. Nope. And so I helped start the Georgia Life Alliance because I wanted a pro-life group in Georgia that actually puts points on the board as opposed to taking players off the field. And that's why the Georgia Life Alliance exists. It is a great organization. They do a great job of passing and advancing pro-life legislation. They will be on the field opposing the assisted suicide legislation of the Georgia legislature, which is a good job. And they will be advancing adoption legislation in the state of Georgia. So if you want to find out more, Georgia Life Alliance is their name. Google, go to Facebook.com/Georgia Life, go to GeorgiaLifeAlliance.com. And also the March for Life is coming up. There's one I know here in Macon where I am. There's a big one on Friday. My kid's going to it, I do believe. If her mother will let her skip school, I'll be in L.A. for HBO. In any event, now. I'm balancing. We've done impeachment. We've done Georgia. We need to go back to Washington, D.C. and the other news of the day. I do want to bring you up to speed on the coronavirus as well. The United States has its first case of the Wuhan flu, which is apparently a highly contagious coronavirus that jumped from animals to humans in China and is now starting its global spread. It has come to our shore, and I will tell you what I know when we come back.
I really do like his opinion on things.
Eric Erickson, the information you need and the truth you demand.
He tells it like it is.
Live every weekday.
Can we all commit to praying for the TV news anchors who are forced to sit with some of the dumbest people to have ever existed on national television? Listen, I was a talking head on TV for CNN and for Fox and now do it freelance, as a matter of fact. In fact, I'll be on Real Time with Bill Maher on HBO on Friday. Alan Sanders will be filling in for me on Friday while I go out there. I do it a couple times a year. And I understand when. So here's what typically happens. For your standard TV talking show, what happens is they send you a briefing packet of all the stories they want to talk about, so you've got time to try to make up your mind. Both when I was at CNN and at Fox, they would send copious notes and articles and links, and you could or could not choose to read all that stuff. Typically, they would send me a driver until I had a TV studio built into my house, and I would drive back and forth to Atlanta. They would send me a car service, and I would sit in the back seat and read all the documents on the way up there, get on my cell phone or my iPad and start Googling and searching and researching. And I was highly informed when I sat down. The problem is that when you get to impeachment, you're kind of playing off what's happening on TV, and it's so dadgum boring, you tune it all out. And this has only happened once in modern American history. And because it's only happened once in modern American history, people really don't know what's going on. This is why precedent matters. This is why Jerry Nadler complained about the Clinton impeachment stuff. Clinton impeachment precedent is so mind-numbing. He doesn't understand that the Senate bases itself on precedent, and it has to even more so now because this is only the second time in modern history it's happened, and only the third time overall that we've had a presidential impeachment. Sure, there have been 68 impeachments, but not of the president, not with Chief Justice presiding. That's only happened three times. Speaking of, poor old John Roberts, he's presiding over the Supreme Court this morning, starting in 5 minutes at 10 o'clock. He'll preside over the Supreme Court until it wraps its arguments at 12. He'll have an hour to eat, refresh, get caffeinated, go to the Senate where he'll preside starting at 1 o'clock. That will run until probably 7 o'clock tonight. He was there until after 2 o'clock in the morning this morning. Thankfully, he got a car service and security to take him home. He can sleep in the car on the way home. It's crazy. But you got these talking heads on TV who are trying to watch this stuff. They tune out on it. They're busy playing games on their phone. Yes, they play games on their phone. I know it because I've sat there on TV with these people who are playing Bejeweled and Tetris and whatnot, cheap versions of Tetris on their phone. I did it too. I know these things. And you're watching this stuff and you're trying to sound educated and you say some of the most supremely stupid stuff that's ever come out of people's mouths on television. And the poor news anchors are sitting there trying to ask you intelligent questions. And they're just, you get dumb stuff. I mean, like Andrew McCabe, who has no business being on television, but CNN trying to be MSNBC, the poor man's version of MSNBC, has him on, and this is his genius moment.
Such a tantalizing offer, right? Because you know the president of all people, he is not the type of guy who wants to turn down a challenge. You know he'd feel some very strong motivation to come in there and duke it out with them. Probably be a terrible, terrible mistake, but my guess is initially he'd want to do it. I think one of the things we can't emphasize enough is that lunch that Phil just told us about, where some Republicans pushed back on McConnell's resolution. That is the first small but first crack in the Republican wall that the Democrats have seen since this entire thing began. So I actually believe that some of what you're seeing now with the insistence on dragging every amendment out, using the entire hour of argument for every amendment, this is the Democrats' way of putting additional pressure on that small handful of Republicans who might be inclined to lean in the direction of fairness and transparency and putting on a real trial.
We're all dumber for having just listened to that. We are all dumber for having to be subjected to that bit of analysis. Do you know why Chuck Schumer dragged this out with full debates? Because he wanted to make it painful on the Republicans. Not because he was expecting to pick off Susan Collins, but because he wanted to make it painful. It's what the minority does in the Senate. It's what the Republicans did. It's what the Democrats do. They want to make it painful. They knew they were going to lose. Even Dianne Feinstein was telling reporters they needed to wrap it up. She was ready to go home. I mean, they made her mad. I'm texting during commercial breaks with a sitting member of the Senate who says that my running commentary is the only thing keeping him sane because he's laughing through how I'm ridiculing all sides. And he says, I have no idea what Schumer accomplished other than making people mad. I said, well, he pissed off Dianne Feinstein. He says, oh, he did that for sure. She's livid. It has nothing to do with trying to break the wall. It has nothing to do with persuading Susan Collins. It has to do with the maximum pain for the Republicans if they're going to vote no on all this stuff. That's what it was. And you don't have to be a genius to know that, but I guess you got to be out of your bubble, the McCabe bubble. And, you know, MSNBC is peddling this nonsense as well, that, oh, there's going to be cracks. I want to explain the cracks when we come back. But before I do any of that, I want to bring you up to speed on the coronavirus, which is actually a bigger news story out there in the nation than impeachment.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.